Water. Earth. Fire. Air. Months ago, all of us could come and go as we pleased, in harmony. Then everything changed when the pandemic attacked. Only the TV series, Avatar, The Last Airbender, a series our friends kept telling us about, would stop us from anxiously watching the news. But just when we needed to stream it most, it vanished.
About a year has passed since my cousin and I started podcasting about Avatar, and although we've all been through a lot in this past year, we believed Aang could save the world. And you know what? We were right. After ending the 100-year war, with the help of their friends, Avatar Aang and Fire Lord Zuko transformed the Fire Nation colonies into the United Republic of Nations, a society where benders and non-benders from all over the world could live and thrive in peace and harmony. They named the capital of this great land Republic City. Avatar Aang accomplished many remarkable things in his life, but sadly, his time in the world came to an end. And like the cycle of the seasons, the cycle of the Avatar began anew. This is Kin Folklore, Avatar, the Legend of Korra.
People of Republic City, welcome to Kin Folklore. We're back to explore the world of Avatar by delving into the complexities of its sequel, The Legend of Korra. I'm Andrea.
And I'm Paul, and we're cousins who podcast about our favorite fantasy and sci-fi television shows. You know, a year ago, we embarked on a journey to podcast about Avatar The Last Airbender, and it was an incredible ride.
Before we leap into Korra, we wanted to reflect on what happened following the finale of Atla, and what brought the world to its current moment when Korra became the Avatar. The graphic novel series by Dark Horse Comics was written by Gene Luen Yang, with Atla creators Michael Dante DiMartino and Brian Kunitzko. Previously, we discussed The Promise, where Aang and Zuko deal with the first post-war conflict in the city of Yudao. This week, we'll be discussing The Search, which explores the mystery of Zuko's mother's disappearance.
We have been waiting for that. Man, Kin Folklore has adult content! So if a Kyoshi warrior sliding into the Fire Lord's DMs for some love amongst the dragons bothers you, it's okay. Go over and head over to the Forgetful Valley and the Mother of Faces will help you imagine it's Zutara or Mei if you're into that sort of thing and Zuko. But if not, let's hop on the back of a blue wolf spirit and let's get into it.
Okay. I'm not just going to let that little shade at Zutara slide. Okay.
Shade at Zutara. Did I shade Zutara? I mean, I don't particularly care for that pairing, but I didn't shade them. I was just saying.
I feel like that was some shade about it being a fantasy. Yes, it is a fantasy, but it could have happened. Fantasy. It could have happened.
Everyone who wants that can go and visit the Mother of Faces. You know, she can help out. Totally.
Wow. Anyway, let's start our summary. In a flashback, many years ago, in the Fire Nation town of Hira, a young couple flirts as they practice the lines to a play. The young couple is Ursa, Zuko and Azula's mother, and Akim, her childhood sweetheart and friend. Akim proposes to Ursa, and she accepts immediately, and runs home to tell her family. But when she arrives, there are some surprising visitors. Very surprised, like this would be shocking to anyone.
Shocking. Yeah.
The Fire Lord, Azulon.
Flameo, Azulon. Flameo.
And his son, Prince Ozai, who's already trash at the tender age of like 20, are there. And Fire Lord Azulon is seeking Avatar Roku's family, because the Fire Sages told him that combining their bloodlines will strengthen his descendants.
Almost like he hid them away, is what Azulon says. And it's like, not almost like, he did.
He did not
want you to find them. He hid them.
You guys are not friends anymore. What is going on?
Yeah.
And so strengthening the bloodline would mean that his descendants would rule the Fire Nation and the world long after his death. Before Ursa can share the news that she is, you know, engaged, Azulon lets her know that Ozai has a proposal for her. And Ursa accepts that one as well.
Double acceptance.
Two proposals like, in one day.
So I need to tell her this is not the Grammys and you're not Adele. You're not getting like 2, 3, 4 awards out of here.
And they leave for the Fire Nation capital immediately. Having heard the news, Akem arrives and he's prepared to fight.
Is he though?
I mean, he's prepared mentally. Like, he's ready to do whatever he has to do, but my boy only has prop swords.
He has a stage prop sword. Like, he's out here with a foam sword. Like, this is not Nerf Wars. What the fuck? I didn't even understand why he showed up. Like, let's just, I would have showed up hand-to-hand combat. The fake sword is a bad look. Gets laughed at.
Oh my goodness. So Azulon is like, nah, and orders his guards to attack. But Ursa begs Ozai to call them off and tearfully and begrudgingly pleads with Akem to let her go, to save them both. In his despair, Akem wanders, you know, sullenly through the forest and builds a home there in the wilderness. Mm. One night, as he sits next to a bonfire, Akem turns around and he sees a mysterious glowing wolf drinking water from a pond. Back to the capital. At their wedding, Ozai basically tells Ursa, forget your old life. You belong to us now. And, you know,
is Buckingham Palace? Is this
wow.
Is this I don't know. Is this the Fire Nation capital or Buckingham Palace? I don't know what's happening over here.
When we next see Ursa, it's years later, and she's composing a letter that she hides in her robe. Afterwards, she removes a family portrait from the wall and looks at several masks that she's hidden there, giving special attention to the mask that Akem once had. And it looks a little bit like the Blue Spirits mask.
Where you at? Where you at? Oh my gosh, the Blue Spirit mask showing up is like amazing. What great, like, what a nod to the series. Like, hey, his mom had this mask from the play from when she was an actor, and that's what he ends up using as his alter ego. Man, that's amazing. I mean, so much there. We can even talk about it later, but man, it's just good stuff.
And she happens to be interrupted by a young Zuko who's afraid to go to sleep.
Mm-hmm. By the Blue Spirit himself.
He explains that his nightmare featured his sister, Azula, which, I mean, obviously.
Yes.
Ursa tells him to hold on to his good dreams and not the bad ones, and tucks him in. After tucking in Zuko, Ursa takes her secret letter to a servant named Aluya. I think that's how it's pronounced. I'm going to go with that. Who has been delivering her secret letters to Akem in the past. Alula has not been doing that, however. She's been betraying Ursa and giving the letters to Ozai. And she gives this letter to Ozai, and he is immediately angry.
She is out here just straight snitching. It's the worst. I just want to note, too, that that Ursa, like, although she gave Zuko those kind words, she did go check Azula's room to make sure she wasn't actually running up in there and was asleep. You know what I mean? Like, that was wild.
Well, I think that what is that, like, Azula says in Atla, the series, that even her mother was scared of her is actually true. I think that her mother recognizes very early that she's cruel.
Yeah, no question. And yeah, 100%. She has a lot more Ozai in her, for sure. So in Zuko's storyline, we're going to talk a little bit about that. We find ourselves in present day and in the city of Yudao. There's a summit happening to discuss a new form of government after the events of The Promise. And attended by this are all the interested parties. We see Korri, we see Snares, we see Sokka, Aang, Katara, Zuko, and the Earth King. These are all teenagers.
That guy. And they're forming... not the Earth King, but he might as well be a teenager.
I mean, mentally. Mentally. Cognitively, we're on the same levels as these children. All right? This is what's happening. Oh, man. What a weight to carry as young people. And Aang, of course, is listening. They're all listening to a professor. Aang, of course, who never did good in school. He is not interested. He's bored. But Zuko's paying attention. And he's inspired by the professor who's leading the talk. And Zuko begins to wonder if how a head of state treats their family reflects on how they treat the nation. What does it mean to him, right? Like, he starts thinking, what does it mean that for his reign as the Fire Lord, he's had to imprison his father, put his sister in an institution, and his mother has been banished for years?
I mean, none of these things are Zuko's fault. So yeah. I understand his point. His family is in shambles, but like... honestly, Ozai should be dead, and Azula should probably also be dead. Like, none of these are Zuko's fault.
I mean, let's play devil's advocate, though, for a second. While I agree that he's not to blame, I could see where he's coming from, right? In the sense that he had to basically, you know, with Katara, bring down Azula as the Fire Lord, who was named the Fire Lord. He helped the Avatar bring down his dad. And he knows that his mom just disappeared after the fact that his father was going to kill him.
Yes, it's fair. But again, none of these are his fault. Like, yes, yeah. I understand why he feels that way because, you know, he's always in his feelings and he carries the weight of the world. As I've said in our very first episode about Atla, he's a stand-in for millennials. but none of these are actually Zuko's fault. Like, Azula did not give him any choice. Ozai is incredibly dangerous and is lucky to be alive.
Yeah.
And you know, as we find out later, Ursa also had to make a choice.
Yeah, and she's solid in a lot of ways. Some other ways I question, but you know, I didn't do him justice. I should have been like, what does it mean that for the reign as a Fire Lord, I had to imprison my father, put my sister in an institution, and my mother has been banished for years. All I have now is my honor. Sorry, gonna help. Miss my guy Zuko.
I do kind of miss the honor stuff. You know, he doesn't have much talk about honor.
I mean, he's got it. He realized he understands honor better now. He doesn't need to talk about it, but I do miss it just from the standpoint of like, man, it was so fun to like watch him go on and on and on about honor. I mean, he still goes on and on and on, but not as much in the comics. Actually, he's actually a little more, he has a little more brevity.
Yeah, he's in his feelings about other things.
Exactly. So after the summit, Zuko comes back to the Fire Nation and arranges to have Azula brought to Ozai's prison. And while the Kyoshi warriors guard and watch them, the two have very little to say to each other. Azula has to be restrained and chi-blocked and rants to Ty Lee about her mother turning her former friends against her, which... Ty Lee is like, what is she talking about? And I'm scared. This lady is off a rocker, is kind of Ty Lee's take. After the meeting, Zuko attempts to take Azula back to the institution, where she promptly does Azula things and escapes, right? Bounces. He's wheeling her back, and she gets out of there, has figured out a way to get out of the restraints, and you see a little bit of lightning, and she's gone. Zuko manages to find her, tracks her down in the palace, and follows her to a secret bunker that he's never seen before. And Azula has found a chest of letters and burns all of the letters except for one. And can see that, you know, she's basically not going to show Zuko the letter. And she admits to him that she too wants to find Ursa. And that she'll help him if under one condition. So we don't know what that condition is yet. But Zuko summons Team Avatar and they arrive without Toph. Toph is back. Her metal bending academy is booming now. She's like, you know, showed what the metal benders, the lily livers, show what they could do. And now everybody wants to be a metal bending student with Toph. Pretty cool. They agreed to take turns, Team Avatar, watching Azula, because part of what the deal was that Azula's going to go with them. So she's been subdued, immediately has to be subdued.
Like in seconds. Like in seconds.
Yeah.
This is such a bad idea. Can I just say, I know Zuko was desperate, but this is such a bad idea.
I mean, this ranks up there with Bad Plan from Game of Thrones. Like, when they go and get the white and the whole thing. This ranks right up there. It's, like, pretty close.
Yeah, I mean, it's very similar. You know your sister, Tyrion, so why are you suggesting this dumb plan? Like, this is... He knows who Azula is. He knows she's extremely capable and powerful. This is just... I know that he was desperate, but this is not the way to deal with it.
Yeah, and I also think he's trying to they leave Iroh in charge of the Fire Nation, and I think he's doing two things here. One, he recognizes that was supposed to be Iroh's actual seat, right? It wasn't like, you know, that he wasn't supposed to be the Fire Lord. It was supposed to be Iroh. And then I think also Iroh, he's trying to do what Iroh would do. I think on some levels he's thinking he's doing what Iroh would do, but maybe Iroh has evolved since he said we should just murk her, like in the middle of the time. But all right. So, you know, at this point, what's going to happen is that they're traveling and they subdue Azula and they're traveling. And then you see that Aang starts making an angry face, like some sort of face starts coming onto him, where it's like his face looks like he has a mad expression. And then he sees a wolf spirit below. At that point, Azula jumps off of Appa, like just jumps like crazy. And they go after her to pursue her. So she gets to the lake where she experiences an hallucination of her mother. She tells the vision of her mother that Ozai has led her to the letter and that this letter will allow her to take the throne. She's captured again, and the wolf spirit has now reappeared to all of Team Avatar. Aang believes the spirit has something important to tell them, and he warns his friends to show it respect. But this spirit is like, fuck that, bro. I'm about to attack. And he does. Appa comes in and intervenes and gets the upper hand and kind of whips up on the spirit. The wolf spirit retaliates by attacking them with moth wasp. Oh, what a terrible attack. Like, it looked gross. Anyway, I was worried for them. Azula convinces Zuko to take off her restraints at this point. And she uses lightning to distract the moth wasp. And the wolf spirit follows them in the other direction. So Azula actually helped them this time.
Whatever. Not worth it. Still shouldn't have bought her.
I agree.
I don't care what she contributes. I really don't. This girl is such a mess. I have such conflicting feelings about Azula.
Yeah. Yeah. There's a lot. I mean, because she, you know, we know the trauma she's endured, but she's also brought a lot of this on herself. You know, a lot of the stuff that she's done. So, yeah, I'm with you. Every time she gets a chance to redeem herself or make a good choice, you very rarely see her do something like this. And I don't think she would have saved them if it didn't also impact her, you know? Uh-huh. So that night at the group's camp, Sokka and Zuko talk about their relationships with their sisters. Zuko covers a sleeping Azula with a blanket, and he finds the letter that she has been concealing. She reads the letter, which is addressed to Akem. In the letter, same one that was given to Ozai earlier, Ursa attests to her undying love for this man and for their son Zuko. So Akem is implicated as being Zuko's dad. Into whose eyes she looks and thinks of him when she sees Zuko. Zuko singles out one particular phrase in the letter that his mother wrote, our son. And it's going to mess with Zuko for a minute here that he may not be Ozai's son.
Well, because he's Zuko. But also, it puts in question, is Zuko actually supposed to be the Fire Lord?
Yeah. I mean, all this time, I thought I knew my destiny. Honor, 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 honor.
But did you know your destiny, Zuko?
I mean, he thought his destiny was to restore his honor and kill the Avatar.
I mean, you spent literal years of your life trying to kill the Avatar because you thought that was your destiny.
Yeah.
I don't know. Okay. So part two starts with, Azula still sleeping, and she is visited by a vision of Ursa that tells her to stop the quest she is on and that the throne is Zuko's destiny. In reality, Azula has actually lashed out at Katara, who's sleeping nearby, and Sokka has to save his sister by striking Azula with his boomerang.
Boomerang!
as which we're so glad you got back. As Azula is recovering, she realizes that the letter is gone. Zuko and Aang are somewhere else, and they're discussing the contents of the letter and the question of Zuko's parentage. Aang poses a question that if you're not Ozai's son, then, like, who is the Fire Lord? And Aang is not really sure what if the letter can be believed. You know, he's sort of questioning, like, well, like, we know you're the Fire Lord. Why are we believing this? Maybe this isn't real. Azula interrupts the conversation, and after an argument, Azula and Zuko basically come to an understanding that they will need to find their mother and call a truce. Zuko, Azula, and Team Avatar sneak into the town. They're at Hira in disguises. These folks love a good disguise. It's just every time they go somewhere, they need to put on a disguise.
They definitely do. Their disguises are epic. They're classic ones. I mean, from the very first beard we saw Aang put on, it's been great.
So when they get into this village, they see two actors performing Love Amongst the Dragons, which is a play that Zuko says their mother would take them to see when they were kids.
I wonder why.
When they ask around about Ursa, a man named Norin introduces himself, and he says that he knew her and Akim. And he invites them to his home, where they meet his wife, Noriko, and their daughter, Kai. Sokka tells the couple that they're drama historians, because Sokka always got the good plan, which is why they're looking for the information about Ursa and Akim. And the family says that all the events happened before they came to the town, but the people believed that Ursa and Akim somehow ended up in a place called Forgetful Valley. Team Avatar leaves with that information, but Kai takes a liking to Zuko and asks that they come back.
So I just want to talk about when they leave. Azula's take on this whole family is their charade was disgusting me. Nobody's that happy. Katara says, Aang and I are that happy. To which Azula goes, because you two are idiots. So good. Oh, God, I loved it. I was like,
once again, Katara and Aang are being real extra.
They're all, listen, if there's a theme for these damn comics, is they are super extra. Like, everything we missed out on seeing in the building of the relationship in the show, like, they're trying to make up for in all these comics, because everything is a sweetie and a my boy, don't touch my boyfriend. What are you doing? That's my girlfriend. It's crazy. It's too much.
So Team Avatar heads to Forgetful Valley, and immediately Aang starts making the same, like, angry face. And that face was on the belly of the wolf. And he is led to a lake where we see the wolf drink from. Azula sees her mother in the reflection of the lake and begins to attack the lake. Like, she's poor Azula. She really needs help. Katara has had enough. Like, she was against Azula coming on this trip to begin with. And she basically goes to Waterbend to stop Azula. And the forest begins to retaliate and attack Team Avatar. That attack was actually the response of waterbending from a woman that they find out is from the Northern Water Tribe named Misu. Misu and her brother emerge, and she has been living in the forest for years with her brother Rafa, who was disfigured during his youth and lost his face. They've been seeking the same blue spirit, who they learned can give faces to anyone. There are three lakes throughout the forest, and whichever one he drinks from, a spirit appears, and they're able to ask that spirit to heal Rafa's face. But they haven't had any success. Every time they get to the lake, the spirit is gone. Aang wants to make sure that the wolf comes to the lake that the siblings need. And so he decides that he's going to go into the spirit world. And he receives help from a flutterbat who helps him to locate the wolf. When he finds the wolf, he rides on its back and arrives back to the lake where the spirit reveals itself. The spirit introduces herself as the Mother of Faces.
Wow. And it's great. I mean, if you haven't read the comic or you're going to go get it, the illustration of this character is absolutely amazing. And the Blue Spirit Wolf. I mean, this is just great. Great illustration.
So much of this is so beautiful. Like, I cannot emphasize enough how beautiful these comics are. Like, they're just beautiful.
Agreed. So even if you're like, oh, I already heard what happened in the comics, going and checking them out is worth it to just look at the illustration. And back at Ursa's storyline, you know, in a flashback, Zuko, Ursa, and Azula are in the royal gardens. The children are arguing, per the usual, and Azula is sent to her room by her mother, right? Ozai is creeper, like creeper style, witnessing all of this without their knowledge, right? He's just like hanging out, observing the family, and seeing what they're doing. Before he meets a highly trained archer who shows up, and he is tasking him with killing Akeem. And months later at dinner, there's a tense exchange between Zuko and Ozai when Zuko defends the children's firebending master,
who Azula has been slandering.
Yeah, of course. Azula is like, you know, he's weak. He's dead. She's doing her Azula thing. It's crazy. It's in this conversation that Ozai utters the words that would stay with Zuko for years. She was born lucky, Ozai says of Azula, and you were lucky to be born. And we've heard this again when he kidnapped Aang.
And he was monologuing in the cave.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah,
in his feelings, as usual.
In his feelings in the cage before he gets mopped up by Katara. Just, you know, round two did not go well for him. So after learning from his assassin that Akeem cannot be found, Ozai confronts Ursa about the letter, and Ursa says that she knew he was intercepting the letters. Ozai lies to her and tells her that Akeem has been killed. Ursa is heartbroken. Sometime later, we learn the details of Ursa being banished. As we already know from Avatar, the animated series, Ozai was about to kill Zuko. But the deal that Ursa made was to provide poison to kill the Fire Lord at the time, Fire Lord Azulon, so that Ozai could take the throne in exchange for sparing Zuko's life. He accepted, but made her promise to leave because he feared that she may one day poison him also, based on the fact that she knew how to make this poison. So Ozai told her she couldn't take the children because they would be his collateral. Not because he wanted them or loved them, but right. That he was going to hold them hostage. He was going to hold them over
her. Yeah. Ozai just is terrible.
He's the worst. And as long as she stayed away, no harm would come to their children. Mind you, not just like her children on her own, their children. So he would feel comfortable if she came back to just murder his children, is what he's saying. But if she tried to take the children or stayed in the capital, he would kill her like he did her boyfriend. So now he's threatening to murder his whole family. This guy, I mean, problems. Like, you know, good at rebranding, really, really bad at being a good human. Like, terrible.
Mm-hmm.
He is the Phoenix King. Jesus. So Ursa agrees to these terms. She wants to save Zuko. So she agrees. And she finds out after she returns home and meets Norrin that her parents have passed away. She thought she was going to get to see her parents again, but they are gone.
Mm-hmm. And so we see already that Norrin lied, right? Yeah. He said that they arrived in the village after Ursa.
Yeah, his story is not adding up. Mm-hmm. Exactly.
Aang returns in part three. Aang returns from the spirit world to find that the others are once again trying to subdue Azula from attacking Misu and her brother. The mother of faces emerges from the water and says that she will grant one request. Aang asks for two, but the mother of faces says, nah, that's not how I rock. You're only getting one. I'm so sick and tired of humans asking me for favors.
I'm the Moth. You don't come up asking the Moth, though. You're just lucky I came over here.
I know. She basically only does this because he's the Avatar. Like, otherwise she would have bounced. She was pretty annoyed that he rode her wolf all the way to the lake. She's like, what is going on? You disrespected my wolf. So Zuko and Aang decide that, you know, Misu's been there for years, Rafa, and they should get their request first. But then Azula runs ahead of them and asks about Ursa.
And takes the one request away from these people who have been in the forest for however many years.
I mean, they're like elderly. Years. I mean, so we have to just underscore that when Misu learned about this spirit, she was a young woman, maybe even a teenager. Yeah. And they are now like at least middle age, if not elderly, like they are older. So this is years and years of their life they've been living in this forest trying to find this spirit, and then Azula just runs ahead of them and takes her one request. It's typical Azula, but pretty horrible.
Oh, Zuzu, even when you're strong, you're weak. And then she runs right in and does it. Ugh, it was bad. It's so rough. Yeah, I didn't love it. I didn't love the move. I expect it from Azula, but it does make you feel it leaves the whole team in a weird space of how they're gonna figure this all out.
Yeah, know? I mean, I was a little worried that when she said the one request, I was like, this is a tough choice because, you know, Zuko's also been looking for his mother for years, mm-hmm. and so I was really like moved that Zuko and Aang agreed together that Miso should go first, that they would find another way to find Ursa. And then, of course, his sister ruins it. So yep. The Mother of Spirits reveals that Noriko is actually Ursa, and that she couldn't understand why someone of such beauty wanted to change her face. Azula runs off to Norn and Noriko's home, and Zuko and Sokko pursue her while Katara and Aang stay behind. Misu tries to convince the spirit to stay, but the Mother of Faces becomes angered and refuses to help Misu and leaves. But Aang, being Aang, trying to find another way, dives into the lake after her. The Mother of Faces expresses her disgust with humans and their lack of gratitude and, you know, basically says she's disappointed with Aang and says all humans, even the Avatar, are ungrateful and selfish. And she tells him to get out of the forest. And then once again, the forest turns against them and starts to yell at all of them to get out. Mm-hmm. And I mean, like the trees, the animals, everything Everyone. Is yelling, get out.
Get out. Yeah. Yeah.
As they're fleeing, Aang airbends Rafa, who loses his mask. He's trying to save him. You know, he's trying to help them get out. And Rafa's mask flies off, and it's revealed that Ko, the face stealer, is the one who took his face. His face is gone. Like, it's not just disfigured, but he doesn't have a face.
Yeah, and he recognizes that he's seen it before. Like, I've seen this before, like with another person and Ko, the face stealer. Yep.
When the Mother of Faces hears Ko's name, she commands everyone is quiet, including, you know, everyone that she told to yell at them, and asks Aang to repeat what he said about Ko, and reveals that Ko is actually her son. They've been estranged, and the legend is that he misses her so much that he goes around stealing faces. Sensing Ko's handiwork, she agrees to restore Rafa's face.
Yeah. What a moment, right? In that moment, you have this brother and sister, right, who one sister is going to all kinds of lengths to help her brother, who was a thief and did things that were wrong, but she wants to help and redeem him because he didn't deserve what the outcome was based on this. And then you have what we already know about Sokka and Katara's relationship, you know, and you see Sokka and Katara's relationship as brother and sister on display here. But then you also parallel that what Rafa and Misu are going through with Zuko's attempt to redeem his sister and trying to like see how he can like also be there for her, and the fact that she's not really playing along, and you get in the midst of that the core piece of what happened to Zuko's mom. Like, Zuko's mom went to this spirit and became a different person. Like, gave up her beauty, gave up everything, and became a different person. Even gave up, you know, gave up her memories at that moment, so that she could not remember the pain of, like, having to leave her children behind. So it's such a powerful moment in the comics, to get that answer that we always wonder through the series of what happened to Zuko and Azula's mom. Like, where is she? And to know that she's been there in the Fire Nation the whole time, just living as a different person, was powerful for me.
Mm-hmm.
So in a flashback, speaking of Ursa, we discover that Norin is her long-lost love as well, Akim. So he is, you know, Norin, who basically we caught in a lie earlier. So he received a new face from the Mother of Faces, and that goes back to us seeing, right, Akim with the blue spirit wolf in the pond earlier when he was, like, lost in the forest and just kind of, like, really distraught. So when we see in this flashback that when Norin and Ursa reunite, she finds out that he's Akim, and we find out that they decide to go into Forgetful Valley to get her a new face, to get a new identity and start over. Ursa struggles with what this would mean and to never see her children again, but ultimately aware of the risk of going back to the palace and always having to lurk in the shadows and see them from a distance, she agrees that this is probably the best thing. Ursa makes a deal with the Mother Faces, as I alluded to, that she not only will change her face, but that she also will have the pain removed of her past life that she lived. In present day, when Zuko and Sokka arrive at Norin and Noriko's home, Azula has not yet arrived there. And they're sitting down to eat dinner with Kai, and Zuko knocks on the door to come back in to see the family. Zuko reveals to Noriko that he is the Fire Lord and her son. Azula interrupts this reunion and attacks their mother, and Zuko basically saves their mom from Azula's attack. As she runs away, Noriko sees the Mother of Faces, Aang, and Appa approaching. The Moth, as I like to call her, asks Noriko, "Hey, do you want your face back and your memories back?" And she says, "Yeah, I do." And so she gives them back. You know, she's feeling generous today. And she gives Ursa her face back and her memories back. And she is Ursa again. Zuko and Ursa finally reunite and speak about his life, how things have gone since she left. And he brings up the issue of his parentage. And Ursa tells him that what she wrote was not true, that all of that in the letter was made up. We learn through a flashback that Ursa wrote that so that she could prove that Ozai was spying on her letters and on her, and, you know, basically doing what Ozai was doing was, you know, isolating her. And Ozai knew that Zuko was his son the whole time because he had been spying on Ursa anyway and tracking her every single movement, because he is, golly, the worst. I mean, we'll talk more about
this guy.
I mean,
this is classic domestic abuse. Like, this is, Ozai can't get any worse.
100%. On top of, you know, all the imperialism, on top of, you know, being a megalomaniac, he's also practicing domestic violence. He's out here, like, you know, spying on his wife and threatening his kids and threatening murder. I mean, we don't love Ozai. There's no, like, any drop you thought that it was wrong to take away his bending. I'm starting to think that was the wrong theory. We should have murked this dude. Anyway. In a conversation Ursa and Ozai are having, she says that she wishes that Zuko was really Akim's son. So Ozai makes a vow. And this vow really underpins everything we saw between Zuko and Ozai throughout the series of Avatar. He says since she feels that way, he will treat Zuko like he's not his son. And every time that he mistreats Zuko, he will simply be fulfilling a mother's wish. So he is looking at the mistreatment of Zuko as fulfilling the wish of Ursa that he not be Ozai's son. Through that flashback, you know, we also see the two of them come back to the present moment, and they exchange, you know, a talk while they're walking away down the street, and just basically talk about how, you know, he wants to hear everything. He wants to hear the whole story about her life before him, before Ozai. What was the story like? And, you know, she promises to tell him everything.
So that's the answer of how Zuko's mother disappeared. And what an incredible story. I mean, I suspected that Zuko's mother was alive.
Yeah.
But I didn't think she would be living under another identity. I didn't think that she would be in the Fire Nation. I mean, I think that to me was the most shocking part. I kind of had assumed that she had moved to one of the other nations. You know, maybe she was even in a big city like Ba Sing Se, where, you know, people are just less known. Like, you know that you can become kind of anonymous in a city.
Yeah.
I mean, Zuko became anonymous in Ba Sing Se.
100%. No, 100%. And I thought similarly. I think it's a nice twist that they put there, that she had, you know, had this much pain that she just wanted to be somebody else. And I also just love that we find out that she didn't want to marry Ozai. That it wasn't like, oh, well, you know, it just was inevitable that she was going to. She didn't want to. And you just find out so much about the way that all worked. And I just I really love the backstory. I mean, I don't love the backstory, what the contents of it are, but I love finding out why, when we meet these characters, they are the way that they are. And then the one character who looms so large in the story, why we don't see her outside of those couple of moments inside of the Fire Nation capital with Zuko and Azula when they were younger. So it's good stuff. I thought it was good. And I guess my one thought was, when they were wondering, well, who would be the Fire Lord if Zuko wasn't his son? I mean, I don't know what's going on with this, like, line of succession, but, like, if he's not the Fire Lord, right, even though it doesn't matter anymore, wouldn't Iroh be the Fire Lord? Like, Iroh would be the Fire Lord. He'd be, like, the only person. Like, it wouldn't just automatically go to Azula being the only child, because he should have been the Fire Lord in the first place.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm still a little bit confused about what happened with, like, how that decision... Okay, let me pause a second. So I think what is being told to us is that when Azula died, mm-hmm. Ozai just sees the crown. And that Iroh, being distraught about Lu Ten's death, didn't bother to fight. Mm-hmm. He just sort of allowed that to happen. But we know that Iroh would step up if he had to. And I think you're right, that if Zuko had, you know, his paternity had come into question, then Iroh is the obvious next choice. So I think that the fact that Azula thinks that she's the next choice, you know, she would have to, first of all, she would have to have people who back her. And given her mm-hmm. behavior, we're not sure how that would pan out. Would the Fire Nation back her? I mean, I think we see in coming comics that maybe there would have been a faction that backed her, or putting Ozai back on the throne. I don't think there's any reason to believe that the Fire Lord has to be a bender, right? So yeah. I think there is a possibility that there are people who would say that, you know, well, I guess if Zuko is not the obvious choice, then we could always put back Ozai. But I don't know. This whole thing is very muddled. I mean, I'm glad that it didn't continue to be ambiguous, because when I got to the panel in the comics where Zuko reads the letter, I was a little bit like, well, where does that leave us? I hope they resolve this, because I think that we've seen even in our own history that anytime there's a question of the line of succession, that leads to another war.
Yeah. Agreed. And I think, yeah, I'm glad it resolved all in, like, the series of the graphic novel. Like, all, you know, obviously it didn't resolve in first part or second part, but by the time you get to the third part, you have the answer. But I also just think that this is also great that it wasn't this too, because there's so much history in, we see in the Fire Nation, some of the stuff later on in Korra, like, you know, we'll talk about that. There's some changes in the Fire Nation, and throughout the comics there's also changes. And like you said, there's factions of people who don't necessarily agree with Zuko being the Fire Lord, and, you know, they have a history, as we know through the series and through all of the other ancillary, like, kind of like content, you know, books, comics, whatever, that the Fire Nation has a history of, like, a really tough family dynamic, like everything. This is not new, these family dynamics. These family dynamics have existed in this dynasty for a long, long time.
Yeah. What did you think of Ursa's decision to give up her memories?
I think it's, I don't want to judge it. You know, in that moment, who could judge it, right? I really thought I may not make that choice. But I also think that it was interesting to see her want to choose the life that she would have had, like, unrestricted, without thinking about the life that she was forced into. Mm-hmm. But I do think that there's collateral damage to that, right? There's, like, you know, everything that's happened with Azula and Zuko and all that, that if she would not have lost her memory while they were doing what they were doing as Team Avatar, when Zuko was running into the Fire Nation trying to overthrow his father, she would have heard of that, and she would have known that that was her son, and she would have maybe been able to reach out to him. Mm-hmm. So there would have been things that she may have been able to help him with that would have helped him to navigate and make peace sooner. So there's a torn, because for Zuko, I wanted her to not make the choice. But for her, I understand the choice.
Yeah, as a person, I can understand her choice. And I think it's a tough choice, but I can certainly understand it. But imagine how different this story would have turned out if, when he was banished, Zuko could have fled to his mother.
Yeah, agreed.
He certainly would not have spent years hunting the Avatar. He would have just been a different person entirely. And I think for Azula, there may have been an option too, that she could have also had a way to reconcile with her mother. We don't know. One of the problems I had with the series is, even though we spend a lot of time with Azula, we never really get to understand her motivations the way that we understand Zuko's. And yeah. So there may have been a point where her reconciling with her mother may have changed her destiny as well. I think we just don't know. Her character probably says no, but yeah. Who knows? You know, maybe when she was in search of Mei and Ty Lee, maybe if she had stumbled across her mother had been able to reach out, she would have also chosen a different path. But I guess we just don't know.
I mean, it reminds me a little bit of The Crown. I'm going to bring it to there because, you know, I'm a big Crown fan. We are big Crown fans. And there's some people who listen to this who are also Crown fans. When, rest in peace, Prince Philip, in the story, he is talking to Queen Elizabeth, and he's explaining about her and her sister, and in general how he says there's like two tracks in the House of Windsor. And the Fire Nation is similar. Mm-hmm. I'll leave it there. Is that... There is this track of, like, that I don't know that Azula can turn back from, predating, like, Atla, everything. There's this track of, like, the Fire Nation in general having, you know, these really noble people who are, believe in honor, take it very seriously, and also this track of in the royal family of people who are, you know, hell-bent on power and desire. And it's inside of what Iroh's talking about when he's talking about the different nations. But, you know, it's what makes them great. And it's also their biggest weakness, that sometimes there's people who are more thirsty for power and strength than they are for nobility and honor and peace. And I think, so I don't know that Azula turns around, even with her mom around. I think her mom was on that other track, and Azula was very clearly on the Ozai track.
Yeah. I mean, I guess we'll never know. Yeah, but I guess we should talk a little bit about how this story impacts Korra.
Well, whew, big one is the Yudao Summit. In passing, in the Yudao Summit, when Zuko first returns back, right, from the Yudao Summit, he starts telling Suki, you know, his kind of flirtation. They flirt a little
bit.
He's
confident. I'm so salty about Suki and Zuko. I mean,
it's so weird what's happening here. I don't know. There's like a strange, like, unspoken thing that we're picking up, like, in these comics. It's like, whoa, what happened? What? But it would make sense about a lot of different things. That's all I'm going to say, that this would go down like this. So anyway, in the Yudao Summit, Zuko spills that Aang wants to create something called the United Republic of Nations, and that's where it was born. So in the Yudao Summit, the United Republic of Nations was born as a way to deal with all the Earth Nation colonies and make it a place where all the people of the different, throughout the Four Nations could come and live in harmony throughout those places. So that's one big way that we see it.
You know, we also see that the chief of police wants to talk about metal bending with Toph, which is foreshadowing, spoiler for Korra, that Toph does become the police chief in Republic City.
And that all the police officers seem to be metal benders, right? Like, the police force are metal benders. So it's interesting to see that the police chief, out of the events of The Promise, wanted to go see about that. So that's really cool.
Well, not all of them are metal benders.
Yeah,
but metal bending is a big part of the policing in Republic City. Also,
the ones who come off the airships is what I'm talking about. Those guys who are like coming off the airships.
I think that's their like their elite force. Mm-hmm. And then we also get that from the very first episode of Korra, Jenora, who is one of Aang and Katara's grandchildren. And is very adorable and also a big character in Korra, asks Katara, whatever happened to Zuko's mom?
Hey, Gran-Gran, I've been reading all the stories of your tales. Like, and I wonder, whatever happened to Zuko's grandma, Zuko's mom? It's the sweetest, cutest thing when it's opening to hear Katara's granddaughter refer to her now as Gran-Gran. Mm-hmm. Can't wait till we get to that.
Yeah. But,
and to ask that question, like, what happened to Zuko's mom? Because it's not something that's so well known. And Katara says it's quite a tale. And she doesn't elaborate, right? She doesn't go into any detail. And now we get the little bit of, we get the detail in this comic.
Mm-hmm.
I think, in passing the fact that Aang wants this to be a prototype, this United, Republic of Nations, I think it's really interesting because Zuko thinks that Aang's being idealistic. He doesn't think that it's really doable, that he's still kind of like thinking there needs to be some other way or plan to deal with it. I'm not quite sure what he thinks the plan will be, but he definitely feels, Aang is doing his Avatar bit of like, bringing balance, and it's not necessarily going to work out.
And I think that's understandable. Everything that Zuko has seen so far and will continue to see in future comics is that this is going to be a lot harder than just uniting everybody. People are deeply entrenched in their beliefs. It's been 100 years of war. You can't just erase that. So I think that Zuko's apprehension is completely legitimate.
Yeah. And, throughout the series, the personal, the political, the spiritual, all these things are intertwined. And Zuko's search for his mother, it's a quest. It was a quest for him to understand his place in the world better, especially coming right off of The Promise, where he was so worried about turning evil still.
Mm-hmm.
It's this part, finding his mother, is an important piece of his identity. And we should recall when we first met Zuko, he was a young man obsessed with his father's acceptance, and he was looking to reclaim his honor, right? Now he's the Fire Lord, and he's learning to become a new version of himself. He's questioning things, and it makes sense that he'd want to seek out his mother, who's like a different aspect of him, like, because all he saw was the strength and the fire and the determination and this, like, power hungry kind of aspect in his dad, and he's had Iroh to kind of show him the ropes, but that's still his dad's brother, right? To find this other part of himself, this link to Avatar Roku, this link to another version, is huge for Zuko's identity, another part of himself. His task as Fire Lord is to help heal the wounds from the past, and in many ways Zuko and Korra are similar in that way. And won't spoil what we're going to talk about in Korra, but it is a big part of Korra, like, learning about herself is learning more about how Zuko deals with his stuff. And as we will see in Korra, she's like very consistently trying to figure out her place in the world too, as the Avatar. The path of Korra's journey is constantly taking her through all kinds of twists and turns about past things that other Avatars have done, things that have happened outside of like just the Avatar cycle, but that affected the world in the time of different Avatars. There's like all kinds of things that happen. And also the history of her own family and the legacies of all of this and how the spirit world has dealt with this in the past too. All the histories of the spirit world. Korra's faced with a lot of different challenges based on all the things that have come before in the Avatar cycle.
Yeah, I mean, I think that Avatar cycle in the past, what the previous Avatars have done, is going to become a really big thing, especially in the, we're going to cover the Rift next, and that's a big thing there, where the legacy of a previous Avatar, spoiler, it's not actually Roku this time, will impact the world in really meaningful ways. And Korra, this is, she's constant, she has an idea when we meet her of what the Avatar is. And she has to learn that the Avatar isn't one thing, that the mission is to keep balance, but the way that you go about that is different for every Avatar. And I think that Zuko is much on the same path in trying to figure out what kind of Fire Lord does he want to be. And that's explored also in future comics. So I think that Zuko and Korra have a lot in common. They're both on this path of, you know, I think we talked about how Zuko was always on this path of self-actualization. Like, Aang was really in tuned with the spiritual and sort of just needed to learn all of the bending, where Zuko is on this constant path of trying to find his, who he is in the world and how to be in the world and what makes him, what is honor? What is that having honor make you a good person? And he had Iroh to guide him, but it still just wasn't enough. Korra, I think, on the other hand, is a person who just doesn't always know what she wants to be and how what kind of avatar she should be. I think in season one, especially, we see Korra really struggling with what it means to be the Avatar. Is the Avatar a symbol? Is the Avatar a hero? Is the Avatar a spiritual leader? She just doesn't fully understand it. And I think that all that balance, as you said earlier, between the personal, the political, the spiritual, it's all intertwined in this story in a really beautiful way. And I think we stress this all the time, but ultimately this is a children's story. And so I truly appreciate that it is exploring these themes of how our personal identity, you know, is part of who we are in the world and how we impact the world. And so this is, I think that this is very, a beautiful way to explore how Zuko starts to become the Fire Lord by exploring his own history.
Yeah, I agree. And the tie-in for him to realize that in order to be a good leader, it starts with you, right? It doesn't start with telling other people how to do things or figuring out how outwardly. He looked at the reflection of his own actions and what he viewed as like flaws, even though we don't blame Zuko for the things that he was blaming himself for. He was like, okay, let me take a hard look at this and see how I can improve myself so I can make sure my nation isn't impacted by my own psyche or my own choices or the things that I've done. And that if they are, they're impacted positively. And I thought that was really powerful. Other thing I see with Zuko and Korra, the correlation is that they just really, really have just the sheer bending strength. Like, they are really strong benders. Not that Aang is in. Aang is a very strong bender. But more so, they're not so linked to the spiritual aspect of bending. They're just very strong. When you first meet Korra and you see Zuko, they're just really great benders. And their power is so much, like, you know, that it takes a while to get to the spiritual aspect of that for them. But when they do, it opens up a whole new idea of what they can be and their potential.
Mm-hmm. Well, in that spiritual disconnect, that turmoil that they have within also prevents both of them from leveling up in their bending practice. You see it with Zuko and learning how to redirect lightning. That inner turmoil really prevents him from learning at first. And you see it, Korra, as she struggles to become an airbender.
100%. Yeah. So that is the search. That is, we answer the question of, as we get closer down the road to Korra, how Zuko found his mother and the story of what happened to Ursa. And it really, and just how we get to the United Republic of Nations existing. We're getting closer and closer to unraveling some of those things. We hope that you're enjoying this coverage. And yeah, please hit us up on Instagram, Ken Folklore Pod, Twitter, Ken Folklore Pod. You can go ahead and reach out to us on Facebook or email at kinfolklore@gmail.com and like or favorite different episodes. We appreciate it.
And leave reviews.
Leave reviews. Yeah. But thank you so much. And we look forward to seeing you next week.
Bye, everyone.